First reading, which is Psalm 105. It's not very often we get to sing a psalm and then read it, so let's remember what we have just sung as we hear the first seven verses read and then beyond to the rest of the psalm itself. Give our attention to the inerrant, infallible, and inspired Word of God. Oh, give thanks unto the Lord, call upon His name, make known His deeds among the people. Sing unto Him, sing psalms unto Him. Talk ye of all His wondrous works. Glory ye in His holy name. Let the heart of them rejoice that seek the Lord. Seek the Lord and His strength. Seek His face evermore. Remember His marvelous works that He hath done, His wonders and the judgments of His mouth. O ye seed of Abraham, His servant, ye children of Jacob, His chosen, He is the Lord our God. His judgments are in all the earth. He hath remembered His covenant forever, the word which He commanded to 1,000 generations, which covenant He made with Abraham and His oath unto Isaac, and confirmed the same unto Jacob for a law and to Israel for an everlasting covenant, saying unto thee, will I give the land of Canaan, the lot of your inheritance. When they were but few men in number, yea, very few and strangers in it. When they went from one nation to another, from one kingdom to another people, He suffered no man to do them wrong. Yea, He reproved kings for their sakes, saying, touch not mine anointed, and do my prophets no harm. Moreover, He called for a famine upon the land. He brake the whole staff of bread. He sent a man before them, even Joseph, who was sold for a servant, whose feet they hurt with fetters. He was laid in iron until the time that His word came. The word of the Lord tried him. The king sent and loosed him, even the ruler of the people, and let him go free. He made him lord of his house and ruler of all his substance, to bind his princes at his pleasure and teach his senators wisdom. Israel also came into Egypt, and Jacob sojourned in the land of Ham. And He increased His people greatly and made them stronger than their enemies. He turned their heart to hate His people, to deal subtly with His servants. He sent Moses, His servant, and Aaron, whom He had chosen. They showed signs among them and wonders in the land of Ham. He sent darkness and made it dark, and they rebelled not against His word. He turned their waters into blood and slew their fish. Their land brought forth frogs in abundance in the chambers of their kings. He spake, and there came diverse sorts of flies and lice in all their coasts. He gave them hail for rain and flaming fire in their hand. He smote their vines also and their fig trees, and brake the trees of their coasts. He spake, and the locusts came, and caterpillars, and that without number, and did eat up all the herbs of their land, and devoured the fruit of their ground. He smote also the firstborn in their land, the chief of all their strength. He brought them forth also with silver and gold, and there was not one feeble person among their tribes. Egypt was glad when they departed, for the fear of them fell upon them. He spread a cloud for a covering and fire to give light in the night. The people asked, and He brought quails and satisfied them with the bread of heaven. He opened the rock, and the waters gushed out. They ran in the dry places like a river. For He remembered His holy promise, and Abraham His servant. And He brought forth His people with joy, and His chosen with gladness, and gave them the lands of the heathen, and they inherited the labor of the people, that they might observe His statutes and keep His laws. Praise ye the Lord. May God add His blessing to the reading and hearing of His most holy word. So I have that first section divided up into verses 1 through 7, and I have spied out 12 commands. 12 commands, one for each of the 12 tribes of Israel, Notice what it says, give thanks, call upon his name, that is to the exclusion of others, make his deeds known, that is acknowledge him in all your ways, sing psalms, talk of his works, glory in his name, that is make his name your boast and not your own. Rejoice in the heart, not just outwardly. Seek the Lord, seek his strength, that is not your own. Repudiate all your resources. Seek his face forever, so we have perseverance. Remember his works, his salvation, the gospel. Remember the judgments of his mouth, his law, and then acknowledge his lordship and sovereignty. 12 particular commands in verses 1 through 7. These 12 commands inform us as to what it means to worship the Lord. If you want to worship him, come to Psalm 105, read verses 1 through 7, and take a look at what that means, and then ask the Lord to give you not only these observances, but that your heart might rise up to meet those observances in everything. The rest of the psalm, beginning in verse 8, really does speak of what it means to put these things into practice, especially the remembrance of all of his wondrous works, talking of his works. And so what do we have? Well, in verses 8 through 24 or so, I don't want to go quite that far. First of all, in verses 8 through 10 or 11, 8 through 11, we have the statement of the covenant, God's gracious condescension to mankind in the covenant of grace. Covenant of grace that was made and advertised, that second covenant, as our confession calls it, in the days of Adam, immediately after his fall, in the days of Noah and the sweet savor of Noah's sacrifice, in the days of Abraham and the promise of the land of Canaan as a type of heaven, in the days of Moses at Sinai, and then in the days of David with the promise of the mighty king. We have that expansion and advertisement of the covenant of grace throughout the Old Testament. And this is the covenant that we are indeed remembering here. This is the great and mighty work of God. You might say, well, is that covenant a bilateral covenant or is it a unilateral covenant? And the answer to that is that in some ways it is unilateral and in some ways it's bilateral. What do I mean by unilateral and bilateral? Is it one-sided or two-sided? Right? Unilateral or bilateral? When we think of the covenant itself and how it is begun, how it is generated, how it comes to earth, how it is made, and so on, that is indeed a unilateral consideration. It is all of God. When we think of our proper response, we want to understand that it is bilateral, and yet in its bilaterality, probably butchered that, we remember also that it is God that supplies both sides. That while we are the ones who believe, that it is God who gives us that faith. He doesn't believe for you. You must believe. And yet that faith is a gift. So there are bilateral elements and unilateral elements. But in all of them, whether one or the other, God is to be praised. And so when we talk of his works and we talk of the covenant, when we speak of faith, when we speak of repentance, when we speak of sanctification, when we speak of those things that God works in us, it is all to his glory. And that is why we glory in his holy name. All right, so then we move on from the statement of the covenant to that we have the most unlikely of recipients in the whole world. I hope you saw that as we were reading along. We're reading along with some understanding. You hear that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob wandered. They went from nation to nation. They weren't a people that you would think God would give the land of Canaan to. They seemed rather to be nomads, wanderers of no account in the world, politically speaking, economically speaking. Although Abraham was a rich man with 318 servants, still he dwelt in what we would call today the tents of Kedar. He was a nomad. He had no sure home. Remember that while God had promised Canaan to Abraham and to his descendants, it was simply a type of heaven. We understand that from Hebrews chapter 11. But notice also that Abraham himself only owned a small field and a cave at the end of that field where he could bury his dead out of his sight. And so the only interest that Abraham had in the world as an inheritance was on behalf of the dead. May I say, there is an illustration there. There is an understanding there that is wider than the mere history of it. That if we would indeed plant our feet in this world and have our inheritance in this world, when this world passes away, so does that inheritance. Now, Abraham is a type of something greater. Canaan is a type of something greater. But they wandered. Joseph, he goes on to tell us, was sold into slavery, was in prison until the day that Pharaoh called him up out of that prison and made him a ruler over his household. So understand that what the Lord is saying here is that when God makes covenant, he makes it often with the most unlikely of folks who in due time will reap those benefits. So be patient then. Like James tells those workmen that have been defrauded of their wages by oppressive masters, what does he say? Be patient then, my dear brethren, until the coming of the Lord. All right, so then we move on from that, and we see Moses and Aaron. And again, we're looking at Moses and Aaron, two guys. One of them left Egypt 40 years prior as a murderer, as a fugitive. And the other is a slave in Egypt. And these two brothers stand before the most powerful king in all the earth. And would you think them likely recipients of God's blessings? And yet they were. And so the Lord brought Egypt to nothing. Talk of all his wondrous works. And so we talk through every particular plague in this psalm that God had wrought upon the Egyptians and how the Lord brought forth his people. How he also showed himself to them in the form of a cloud by day and a fire by night to lead them about wherever it was that they needed to go, and interposed himself between the Egyptian army and his people. And so we're hearing of all the mighty works of God. However, I want you also to hear the purpose of those mighty works. Because the psalmist, it's very interesting how he saves that for the end, doesn't he? Look at what he says at the end of the psalm, verse 44. He gave them the lands of the heathen, and they inherited the labor of the people, that they might observe his statutes and keep his laws. This is not just a history lesson, beloved. It is not just a lesson of how God takes the most unlikely of recipients, sheds his grace abroad upon them, gives them the inheritance of those who were formerly the inhabitants of that land, raises them up out of slavery, draws them up out of prison, sets them before kings, and gives them authority in the sight of the mighty ones of the earth. There is a purpose to all of that. That we might keep his commandments and his statutes. That we might remember his great promise, his great covenant. And so I am here to tell you this day with the psalmist in Psalm 105 that the covenant of grace is not inconsistent, but rather the genesis of obedience. The covenant of grace is not inconsistent with, but is rather part and parcel of God taking a people that are lowly and humbled and undeserving and setting them before kings. The covenant of grace is the means by which God takes a people that are actually deserving of his wrath, and he makes them his friends and gives them the heritage of those who call upon his name. That's what Psalm 105 teaches. And so when we start out in Psalm 105 and we hear in those seven verses those 12 commands as it regards how we worship and how we serve God and how we give ourselves to Him. We remember also that that is the benefit of the covenant of grace. Let's stand and call upon the Lord in prayer.